When Muscle Shoals Sound Studio in Sheffield, Alabama first opened in 1969, it was quickly marking up the charts with number one hits by the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, Paul Simon, and many other legendary recording artists. One of the most fascinating aspects of the Muscle Shoals studio is the funkiness of the studio environment itself. It's far from high-tech, a key reason why performers love its unique sound qualities. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Muscle Shoals Sound Studio. Come along and join me to discover the rest of the story.
Terrell Benton, Muscle Shoals Sound Studio, tour guide in Sheffield, Alabama.
Tell us about the studio and the history of this. This is like second iteration, isn't it?
It is. It is. The Swampers, at that time known as the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section, 1969, left Fame Studio and came to this little building. This little building was actually built in 1947 by the cemetery across the street. It was a casket showroom.
A second life for the casket.
A second life. The ghosts are good here, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, the guys came over, and with the help of Jerry Wexler from Atlantic Records, he loaned them the initial money to come in. They put a little of their own money in it, and they came over and started working here in April of 1969.
It's just so incredible to me. Just give us five of the top bands and performers who performed here, and that'll set the stage.
Bob Seger, Paul Simon, Rolling Stones, Rod Stewart, Willie Nelson. We could go on and on.
How incredible that they sought out this studio. This wasn't the reverse.
No, this little studio, you know, was the only studio in the country where the musicians actually owned it. I think that was part of it. These four young men at that time when they moved over had a dream, and they came over, and through the help of Jerry Wexler and their own absolute talent.
And that group of musicians, they were called the Swampers.
The Swampers, yeah.
And talk to us about the backstory of the Swampers and how they started out and came to be here and not there.
Well, in the mid-60s, they went to work for Rick Hall at Fame Studio, and they were actually known as the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section. The backing band for Aretha Franklin, Wilson Pickett, Clarence Carter, Etta James. Then they decided to step out on their own. And with the help of Jerry Wexler, who was the vice president of Atlantic Records, he was actually the man that had brought Aretha and Wilson Pickett over to Fame. They came to this little building, and he continued to help these young men for years and years.
So he was the funding, the financier for this operation?
He certainly was. Yeah. He sure was. Yep. He actually, I believe, it was like $18,000 he loaned them, which was a sum of money in 1969.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what my dad earned in a year.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, they came over, and obviously, you know, Jerry had such a tremendous background. You know, he was actually a journalist.
Oh, interesting. Did not know.
He had joined the military in World War II and then went to Kansas State. And here was a kid from Washington Heights, New York. Went back to New York, eventually got a job as a writer for Billboard. He is the man that invented the phrase rhythm and blues. He wrote a weekly column.
It was called Race Records, right?
Absolutely, and he was highly offended. Years later, he said he wished that he had called it something else, but Rhythm and Blues Today was the title of his weekly article for Billboard. He went to Atlantic Records, became the vice president, became a part owner in the company, and then started off by signing folks like Ray Charles, the Coasters, the Drifters, on and on.
Back to here. Talk to us about some of the other seminal performers and groups that came here.
I think the thing that mainly pops out is the Staple Singers. I'll Take You There, Respect Yourself. These four young men, the Swampers, were pivotal in that change from gospel to pop for the Staple Singers. And Rod Stewart left here with two number one albums. In fact, Rod still refers to the building as the tiny little room with the colored lights. Leonard Skinner, Jimmy Johnson of the Swampers, was the man that brought them here initially. We could go on and on and on. Paul Simon, it's a fascinating array and a diverse array. One of the biggest selling reggae records of all time was Jimmy Cliff's The Harder They Come, and part of that album was done in this building as well.
In this studio, in the room we're in right now.
Yes, sir.
And basically everything we see is it was.
It certainly is. We worked very hard after the documentary Muscle Shoals came out. And with some outside grants and funding, we were able to recreate it exactly as it was.
So you can repaint it.
Yes. Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Yeah. I think that initially when they were putting the studio back together, a video crew came in with Jimmy and David and Roger of the Swampers and basically said, is that the correct yellow? Is that the correct
right,
red?
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
The other thing that amazes me, this is probably the 10th studio I've been in between Memphis, Nashville, and down here. I was so naive, thinking that all you guys would have all of the high-tech, state-of-the-art acoustic baffles and whatnot, and this is so funky. Basically 70s, man.
It is. Well, when the guys first moved in, they realized it was a tin roof. So they went and bought burlap and housing insulation, came in and wrapped it up the first weekend they were here in April of 69. The cement block portions of the walls, the sound would just bounce and fracture. So the styrofoam pieces are actually what the glass part of your electric meter would come in, and they identified which ones had the issues. So all of these hits were burlap and styrofoam.
That's so funny. And here it is.
Here it is.
And that's part of the magic, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
Part of what makes that sound what it is.
It is. This little room, I know when a session starts here now, the walls come alive.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel it. The hair on your arms will stand up. It's that intense in this little room.
Isn't it fascinating how important those environmental, acoustic, atmospheric elements are that you think and you look at and they appear static, but they're very much dynamic and alive?
They are alive. This little room is alive. The corners will bounce off each other.
Mm-hmm. You don't even have any baffles in your corners.
No. We'll move a couple. We had a session here last December, and after about the first track, the producer walked out and said, that corner's bouncing off this corner, so we moved the baffle over. It makes the artist work hard, and I think that's one of the keys to the hits. Absolutely.
Interesting. A little bit more about some of the seminal performers in the past, right, and then moving into today. You're still going.
We're still going. Well, of course, the first artist to come to the building was Cher. Jerry Wexler at Atlantic had signed her to a solo contract. The next artist in was a young lady that back in 67 had had one of the biggest hits in the world, Lulu, To Sir With Love. And the hit off, there's a little hit off this record they did here called Oh Me Oh My, I'm a Fool for You Baby. And then shortly after that, Boz Scaggs came. And one of the key elements in the Boz Scaggs album, it was his second solo record. His first record had actually only been distributed in Japan. The key element to that, besides the Swampers, was the addition of Dwayne Allman on guitar. Dwayne played many sessions in this building. In fact, one of his last sessions before his death was actually in this building.
Oh, interesting. And so, going forward, his brother, Greg?
Greg never recorded in the building. And according to what David has told me, most of the Allman Brothers were in this building. But Greg never recorded in this building. He did his last record before he passed away at Fame, though.
Okay.
Yep, sure did.
Okay, let's push into the here and now.
Here and now, we have a connection with Dwayne Allman. The Allman Betts Band, Greg's son, Dickie's son, and Barry's son, have done both of their albums here. These kids walked in, and Barry Oakley looked at me one day and said, I walk in the back door and the hair on the arm still stand up. It was just funky and comfortable enough. And they also had wanted to record directly to analog tape, just like the old days.
Yep.
And so we were able to accommodate that. So it was a fascinating 6 days last December, really.
And that's the other thing. You got all this digital technology, and yet some of the purists love the tube technology.
Absolutely.
To this day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the board that we have back there is a 1969 board. It was actually hand-built for Chet Atkins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's a little 16-track API machine. It's absolutely one of the funkiest things in the world, you know. One of the other bands that we're really proud of, Dave Cobb brought down Rival Sons. Last album was actually nominated for a Grammy. That was a fun thing to be around.
Yeah.
Dan Auerbach from the Black Keys came down, and as well as Chris Stapleton. So it's still active and still going.
Talk about the Rolling Stones for a moment. That's incredible.
Well, the Stones had initially wanted to record in L.A. or Memphis. They were touring the states. Well, they didn't have the visas required to record in America. So L.A. and Memphis said no to that. But Jerry Wexler of Atlantic Records said, got this little place in Alabama. He was actually trying to sign the Stones to Atlantic, and he did. Well, the Stones came in on December 2nd of 69, and the first night they were here, they recorded You Gotta Move. The second night, Brown Sugar. And the third night, Wild Horses. It's not a bad 3 days.
Yeah, right here.
Right here.
In the one room.
In the one room. And as a matter of fact, the lyric and the arrangement for Wild Horses were written in the little bathroom here. Probably the only studio in the world with a bathroom in the live room, but that's what you deal with. It worked.
Where did they stay?
They actually stayed at the Holiday Inn in downtown Florence, Alabama. The Wexler actually wrote up the contract for them to sign with Atlantic Records in the restaurant at the Holiday Inn.
Very, very cool.
The piano.
Yeah.
They bought this little piano in 1970 and brought it over. You know that piano intro to Bob Seger's Old Time Rock and Roll? That's the piano. Mm-hmm. Main Street, We've Got Tonight. Rock and Roll Never Forgets. As a matter of fact, Old Time Rock and Roll was written by one of their staff songwriters, a man named George Jackson. He had one other big hit, One Bad Apple for the Osmonds. This is also the piano that you hear on Kodachrome, Paul Simon. Rod Stewart's Tonight's the Night. And it's also the piano where a roadie from Lynyrd Skynyrd sat one day while everyone was at lunch. They came back from lunch, and this roadie, who was a classically trained pianist, had used his time well. He had written Freebird on this piano while they were at lunch.
I'm as free as a bird now.
I think last summer there were 4 TV commercials in prime time. On 3 of the commercials, it was the Swampers and this piano. On the other, it was just the Swampers.
I love it. Somebody wanted to learn more, where would you direct them?
Go to our website, muscleshoalsoundstudios.org, and look at our merchandise, check on tour times, and actually also there's a recording tab on there. If you're interested in recording, you can submit what you plan on doing. Terrell Benton, Muscle Shoals Sound Studio tour guide in Sheffield, Alabama.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.